I wanted to be on TV in some manner or fashion, but I always was interested in the news. So my wife and I were the co-editors of our high school newspaper. And at the same time, I used to occasionally write a column for our local neighborhood newspaper. So I was always kind of in news.
My first journalism job was doing newscast at WSBT in South Bend, which was way fun. And I was later an intern at Talk of the Nation. Then I became a producer there. And then it got canceled.
Ah.
Such a great show. Call-in shows are so fun to work on.
Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was, and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dahlers and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Good evening, and thank you for being with us, 708 on 720 WGN. I am Andrea Dahlers. This is Andrea and the reporters, and I am so excited tonight. We have a panel of two, Courtney Guzman and John Chase. I'm calling this the Investigative Reporters Panel. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks,
what do you think of the new studios?
Me wear my pajamas in.
Yeah. You guys were so cute, Courtney's like, well, because you glam up every single day for WGN TV, mm-hmm. where you're a reporter. Right. And how does it feel not having to glam up at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Actually, it feels pretty good. I put on a little something for you because I said, oh, I'm going to see my girl Andrea.
Right.
But yeah, it actually feels pretty good. I was like, oh, I'm still kind of working, but I don't have to worry about, you know, all the glitz and glam of the morning. So
right. Except WGNradio.com right now. We are on camera. People will be calling in and asking to zoom in on both of you, not me. Not David Jennings. Sorry, David. John, and again, I'm glad you dressed up as well.
Yeah, well, this is my regular everyday work outfit, which is always the khaki pants and the collared shirt, and that's about it every day.
Well, I'm so glad that you guys are here. There's so much to talk about. We're going to delve into your backgrounds and how you both became reporters as well. I know, John, you are the director of investigations at the Better Government Association, but you spent nearly 20 years mm-hmm. as a general assignment reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Courtney, of course, with WGN-TV, we see you every morning,
yeah.
And I get the pleasure of spending some weekend mornings with you as well.
And you are also fabulous. Stories. We love having you.
Well, I'm very excited to have both of you here because I said you're both investigative reporters and this is your passion at heart. So without further ado, let me have you guys introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about where you've been, where you went to school, where you grew up. Courtney.
So I've been at WGN for almost 5 years now. And prior to that, I worked at Channel 2, CBS Chicago here. I worked there for 2 years doing freelance. And prior to that, I worked in St. Louis and started off in the small markets like Evansville, Indiana. Originally from Chicago, grew up on the South Side. I'm a product of CPS schools. So
okay.
I went to Whitney Young High School and Owen Academy, which is a magnet elementary school. And, you know, I still live here. I still love my city, and I'm so glad to be home. So
absolutely.
So glad to be home.
We're glad you are home. John, tell us a little bit about the years that you spent at the Tribune and before that.
Yeah, so, I grew up, we're all Chicago natives here. I grew up...
right, all
fist
right.
Bump.
fist bump.
And, I grew up on the northwest side, like far northwest side. Lots of cops and firefighters up in Edison Park,
okay.
Norwood
mm-hmm.
Park neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I'm a White Sox fan, so...
Yes. I knew I loved you for a reason. Yes.
Right? Right.
And then I went to school at Indiana University, and that's where I got involved in journalism, but worked a little bit in Indiana. And then I've been in Chicago journalism since the mid-90s. Worked my way up through City News Bureau, which mm-hmm. I can talk about later, but and was at the Tribune for 18 years, and then about 2 years ago joined the Better Government Association. So it's great. Chicago's my, you know, grew up here. It's my passion. It's what I really love. I've had opportunities to go to Washington and been like, no, I like covering journalism in Chicago. It's such a great town to cover.
This is such,
cover.
Isn't it such a fantastic news town? And I mean,
aside
from stories that we've all covered, Blagojevich and Ryan and the corruption trials, I think right now with this mayor's race, this is going to be historical, obviously, for, you know, no matter whether Lori Lightfoot or Toni Preckwinkle wins, obviously, mm-hmm. first female African-American mayor of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2019. Why didn't this happen sooner? But this is going to be historical on so many levels. But what are your thoughts? Did you guys think this race would shape up the way it has been? You know, let's backtrack 6 months. Did you think this would happen, Courtney?
You know, I did not think it would come down to these two candidates. There were some other candidates that I thought, because of the money, because of the clout, because of the name, would probably be the top contenders, but it didn't shake out that way. And a lot of people talked about low turnout in this particular election. But it turned out the way it was supposed to turn out. I mean, everyone that wanted to vote in this election, we had plenty of opportunity, especially in light of the Laquan McDonald situation. This was such a crucial election for people to come out and vote and change their alderman and, you know, get the mayor who they wanted to see in office. And unfortunately, a lot of people didn't take advantage of it. But the people that, you know, felt like it was important to them, they showed up to the polls. I know I did. And, you know, I was really delighted to see the top two contenders, both African-American women. And, you know, one of them openly a part of the LGBTQ community. So it'll be interesting to see the next couple of weeks, you know, how this all works out and who will be on top.
Right. John, as having someone who would cover Mayor Daley, Daley's plural, did you expect this shaping up this way?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I would say I was most surprised by Lori Lightfoot. I think a lot of people sort of expected Toni Preckwinkle because she had the union backing and because the turnout was, you know, was how it was. It wasn't great. It wasn't a huge number of people. It that the unions come out and they support Toni Preckwinkle. So that's, you know, so that didn't surprise me. Lori Lightfoot really did surprise me. I think a lot of people expected Bill Daley to win because his brother and his dad.
Longstanding name in the city.
But yeah, you know, the Jeremiah Joyce thing back, he was running, Jeremiah Joyce's son, Jerry Joyce.
Yeah.
Him sort of splitting that vote with Daley up on the northwest and southwest sides was really interesting, and that allowed Lightfoot to sort of, you know, get carve right up in the middle. And so it's really fascinating. I mean, Chicago is definitely turning around a little bit, and, you know, and there's a real sort of movement, I guess, you know, with how people are voting right now. And so I find that really fascinating to watch.
Any early predictions?
I always avoid predictions.
I know, I do too. Oh, I thought I'd pull it out here.
We're talking politics here. You're trying to get us in trouble.
Right. We'll switch. We'll talk courts. We'll talk courts because I know, of course, obviously, Blagojevich, Ryan, John, and Courtney, you have spent extensive time covering the R. Kelly trial, and you've been at the courthouse and Van Dyke. So courts, I mean, are in your blood as well. What's it like to cover a court case?
You know, these court cases in particular have been surreal because these are people that, for instance, with R. Kelly, people that I grew up listening to, you know, and grew up, you know, being a fan of, and now you see them walking through this courtroom or even through the courthouse, and you know they're in trouble. Jussie Smollett, another one. You know, I used to watch Empire. I was, you know, a fan.
I was a fan of Empire too.
Yeah, the early seasons. And so this has been a true media circus because we've had so much interest in all of these cases, and all of them hit in February, and we've been inundated with national news. You know, we've seen the TMZs of the world come out and cover these trials. So it's just been, whereas we're the local reporters, we're the ones used to being there at 26th and Cal. Now we're fighting for space with the networks. But it's been really surreal covering these things and seeing these iconic figures and these well-known figures in the limelight, but in trouble facing these major charges and talking about jail time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say media circus, that's such a good way to put it, because with Smollett, with R. Kelly, I mean, just being in active newsrooms like we are aware of when they're going to be there, when they're coming out, fighting for a seat with the national media. Right. I mean, and you've covered stories like this too.
Yeah, I'm not covering either one of those, but I have covered plenty.
Sure.
But that was one of the things I was going to say, which I found really interesting. I think the local news organizations in both those stories have really sort of shown, like, you know, when you compare that to how the national, the TMZs have been covering it, I think we've really done a really good job. The Jussie stuff, there was a lot of like speculation and rumor that was running rampant nationally, but if you read the local and watched the local TV stations, you didn't see that.
Right.
You saw it was a little more tempered. There was a little bit of skepticism, and, you know, and it was very carefully, more carefully reported than like TMZ was doing. So I was really impressed by how some of the local media organizations, the newspapers, TV, and radio stations have really covered those two stories.
And you know what? I think we had to, John, because we have lasting relationships with these organizations. Right. So you're talking about CPD, the state's attorney's office, all of these organizations. We have lasting relationships that have been ongoing for years. And so we can't, you know, TMZ can be reckless and report whatever they want. And, you know, I've heard some stories about the calls they were making to News Affairs and things like that. But, you know, we have to continue our relationship after this. So I think that's where it was important for us to kind of gracefully cover these stories and know that we had to, you know, maintain that relationship.
Yeah, and tread lightly as well and fact check, which I agree with both of you. I think the Chicago media has done an excellent job because they are stories that have to be covered. And I think what frustrates me as a reporter and a journalist is when I hear people kind of criticizing the media saying, well, either A, why are you covering it? Or why are you covering it this particular way? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to treat every story. This was a story, as both of you alluded to, on a national level. You know, so everybody, you had to be careful with this story.
Both of these stories, everybody wanted a piece of. And these are figures that, you know, almost everyone has a connection to. R. Kelly, everyone has heard that song, I Believe I Can Fly. Mm-hmm. Everyone has listened to Step in the Name of Love or something that he has, you know, come up with. He's been around for, what, 3 decades at this point.
Right.
And he's from Chicago.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, we have a stake in this. And his fans, he's still got a lot of hardcore fans here. So this is a story that people cared about. And that's why we stayed on it and we kept on it, even though some people were like, I'm sick of hearing it. Jussie Smollett, another situation. You know, when you're talking about the implications of someone lying about a hate crime and indicating a noose was used, the implications of that and how serious. And then when we talk, you're even bringing in politics, talking about MAGA country. Like, there were so many things that sparked a level of interest in that case. Mm-hmm. So I just think that is where we have to stay on it, and we're going to stay on it until the end to see how this all plays out.
Right. And then ethics comes into that, into play as well.
Right. Well, yeah, one thing I wanted to add on was, you know, Jim DeRogatis, who worked for the Sun Times, he wrote about R. Kelly back in 2000. Again, going back to local and how this has been a story that has been covered by Chicago. So with R. Kelly, I mean, Jim DeRogatis is covering this, you know, 18 years ago.
It's
been slowly, and, you know, honestly, I wish some of the other media organizations, including my own, would have done more in between. But I think we're doing, you know, now that it's in court, I think, you know, it's being covered, you know, being covered well. And and the Jussie thing, you know, that was, like you were saying, just there was, you know, that got into so many different layers because it was both, you know, political. And it became a national because he's a national figure.
Right.
And then there was this whole element of the MAGA country and the, you know, wearing red hats and the noose. And so it split people up, like, instantly, especially on social, you know, Twitter and Facebook and social and different social media platforms. That it was fascinating to watch and try to. It's a very difficult situation when you're trying to cover those stories,
right?
To do that, you know, as you know, fairly, but, you know, mostly just trying to get to the truth and trying to figure out the best way to get to that truth because it's elusive.
I do think the Chicago media did a great job, though, because think about that. If that was a story for not someone who wasn't a Hollywood celebrity, you know, you have a hate crime, you have a homophobic crime, allegations of at this point. We as journalists, you have to cover that story in a predominantly nice, you know, expensive area, Streeterville, you know, and a lot of my coworkers live in this area, and they were scared to death thinking, oh my gosh, you know, there's a racist, homophobic, you know, duo or whatnot on the prowl or on the loose doing this and targeting this Hollywood celebrity, then anybody could be targeted. So it's a little bit of fear in there too.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you this. I know a lot of people from Chicago, when this story came out, they were not buying it. And I'm just being real because there were just some things that didn't add up. Like the fact that he was still wearing the noose when the police came. And, you know, the fact that MAGA country in the middle of Streeterville. Like, no, this is not MAGA country. Right. We all know this. This is a very Democratic town. Like, we know this. And, you know, it was just some other things that were mentioned about along the storyline, even the homophobic you know, comments that were allegedly made. This is not the city for that. And not to say it doesn't happen, but I think it would have been more believable. I mean, don't take this the wrong way. If he had said he had got shot at or something,
he
probably would have believed that a little bit better than this homophobic, racist attack.
Right. So we're going to see how this plays out in court.
Yep.
You'll be on that. I know you're going to be on this story as well. We're talking to Courtney Guzman and John Chase, who are part of our panel tonight on Andre and the Reporters. Much, much more about their backgrounds and why they wanted to join this wonderful yet sometimes crazy profession. More after this on 720 WGN.
Let's get back to Andrea Darlis and the Reporters on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Chris Duffy. A huge thank you to our new producer tonight, Vivian Lanoux, who's doing an awesome job. We're going to talk to her and find out a little bit about her later on in the program. Thank you, Vivian, for everything tonight.
Thank you.
You're doing very well.
Yay, Vivian!
See, Courtney and John are giving you a huge thumbs up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're talking to Courtney Guzman and John Chase, and I know we can't get into a big, long topic. We're going to talk about your backgrounds, where you guys came from, why you wanted to. I know we know a little bit about Courtney. We've got to find out a little more about John. And why you guys wanted to become reporters. But I have to ask you, but it's popping up all over every single screen. 50 people charged in this massive college admission scam, including two big-time Hollywood actresses, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin. And it was funny because everyone in our newsroom was saying, oh, whatever happened to Lori Loughlin? Oh, she's back.
From Full House.
Fuller House.
And so. Felicity Huffman was from Desperate Housewives.
Yeah. Desperate Housewives. And she's William H. Macy's wife.
Yeah,
right.
So mm-hmm. She's shameless. I'm sorry.
Oh, you went there.
Isn't this a weird story? A story I never, I mean... It's kind of like ripped from a Hollywood Lifetime movie.
You know what? It makes me so mad. It makes a lot of people mad. People that actually had to bust their butt to get through college,
right.
Like me.
That's right.
I took the ACTs. I took, you know, I worked my butt off to have work study and have jobs and get into school and
right.
Do all of these things. And, you know, I didn't have parents to send me. My grandma put me through college.
Yeah.
So at Hampton University, by the way. Oh. So I have to say, it just really makes me mad to show this level of privilege that people think money can get you anywhere, including inside of college. Now, these are people who are already at an elevated status.
Oh, yeah.
They
right.
should have no issue with getting into the schools that they want.
Right. And schools, you like you were saying, Yale, Stanford. I mean,
right.
These are
USC.
Harvard.
Right.
I mean, yeah. These, yeah.
And, do the work.
Paying a lot of money.
Make your child do the work.
Yeah.
It just makes me mad.
It really makes me mad.
Yeah,
does.
Absolutely. You said the right word, the privilege. It does sort of hit this note that a lot of people have been, that has become really significant in the last 18 months is this issue of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of hits right in it because, you know, a lot of parents with kids in middle school and high school right now are like thinking about college and, oh, you know, all the issues. And it's like, oh, and now there's a secret class out there who can just write a check
right.
and literally cheat their way in. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's already all these, you know, internal favors for people, you know, some of these people are Hollywood elites,
sure,
you know,
sure.
CEOs.
Coaches.
So there's already like some assistance there for them. They have all the benefits of the world, and then now when they can't even do that, then it's like on top of that they're cheating.
Right. We will have much, much more with Courtney and John next on 720 WGN.
It's Andrea Darlis and the Reporters on 720 WGN.
735, 720 WGN. Thank you for being with us on the program tonight. Our panel, John Chase and Courtney Guzman. We've been talking a little bit about stories of the day, news of the week, news of the year. I want to find out what made each of you want to become a reporter. Have you always wanted to do this? Has this always been a passion? Courtney, why don't we start with you?
It was process of elimination for me. So I thought my father would tell me, you want to be an anesthesiologist. At the age of five, he tried to train me how to say it, you know, because they made a lot of money.
Right.
And I was like, what is that? What do they do? And so, but really, I wanted to be an attorney and I wanted to be a trial judge. And then when I started studying and realizing, you know, the boundaries and, you know, what you had to do, I was like, you know, that might not be for me. So it was actually in my first semester of college that I decided to major in journalism at Hampton. And it was great. It was everything I've always been, inquisitive. You know, I have an innate, I always ask questions, always, always, always.
The curiosity factor. Yeah.
And then I was always a storyteller. All my life, I used to win young authors contests at school all the time, every year, because I wrote these, you know, crazy stories that people love. So it just worked out, and I love talking to people. So
and that's where it all started.
Yep, that's how it fell into place.
So you could have been an anesthesiologist.
Yeah, right.
But a reporter now.
I didn't want that on my, no. You know, I like making mistakes. I mean, you know, people make mistakes,
right.
But I didn't want that on me.
I don't want to make that
mistake. No.
Not that mistake.
Yeah.
Exactly. How about you, John?
So I was always good at like writing, and but my mom was a very practical person. She like, you're never going to be an author. You will not make a living as an author. You're going to be a struggling. And so I was like, all right, well, how do I write but actually have a living? And so I started, you know, exploring on that. And I just remember being really interested in both politics, especially local politics, and then in writing. And so when I went to college, I took like a journalism class, and I really thought it was really interesting. And then I landed at my student paper when I was my first semester sophomore year, actually. And I just met people who I synced with for the first time, like in my life. Like I was like, oh, these are my people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they were sort of sarcastic, bit of, you know, smart aleck, but also, you know, with a skeptical sort of point of view related to the world. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like I was totally hooked at that point. And I just never left. It was just it. And then, you know, I was, like I said, a decent writer. And so it was just I knew that was what I was born to do.
Both of your names are synonymous with Chicago journalism. You have, you know, we can go on until tomorrow morning with the different stories that you've covered in court cases and politics and investigative stories. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I told you I was going to ask you this, so I gave you a little time to think of it. I want to know what story most affected you, either just maybe something that was just you were very passionate about or just really stayed with you.
Yeah. So I'll go first. I actually have two. So
please,
one is
he's thought about this a little bit extensively.
That's we have plenty of time. Good.
I mean, the first thing is the thing that I think I've done the most work on was Rob Blagojevich. So I was the beat reporter for the Tribune up here in Chicago, covering Rob Blagojevich, and so without everybody knows that story, or most people, I'm sure your listeners know that story. Mm-hmm. The thing that sticks out with me on that was actually being out in front of his house the morning of his arrest, before he was arrested, and watching the FBI SUVs pull up, and just sort of realizing we were witnessing history, and just being part of that sort of, and being an instrumental part of that. I mean, we had been for months and years, really. I'd been sort of slowly, you know, I was a beat reporter, and then I turned into investigative reporter by covering him. You know, all of a sudden there were questions about Patty and her real estate deals and other things related to hiring in state government.
Sure.
And so from there, it just sort of evolved. But then that morning on December 9th, 2008, being there, watching it happen, and then watching everything evolve, and then that was something that I just, you know, has always stuck with me and will forever.
It's almost the story of a lifetime.
Yeah, and then you had on the show a couple weeks ago, Jeff Cohen, and I, we wrote a book about it, because it felt like, as much as we did with the Tribune, it still felt like there was a lot more to be done. And that was actually really great, like just being able to report out a book to the degree where you just sat down with people and you weren't worried about like a deadline in 2 hours, but really tried to let people talk and really understand it and go back to them and make sure, you know, you had things, you know, dead on right. So that was great. The other is really a sad story, and it sticks with me forever. And I don't know how many people remember this, but there was a young kid, and his name was Robert Sandifer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know that?
We've done stories, of course.
Yeah, Yummy. Everybody called him Yummy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ended up being on the cover of Time magazine.
That's
so
right.
I was so for the listeners who don't know the story, he was an 11-year-old, and he shot a young girl named Siobhan Dean as she was, it was a summer night in 94, I believe. And she was having her hair braided on her front porch down in Roseland. And he was part of some gang initiation, and he shot her, and then he became the most wanted kid in America because the police were looking for him. And I was working at City News Bureau of Chicago, which was like a place for young reporters to cover, and they covered a lot of cops and stuff. And so I was covering that story. And I was there when Siobhan Dean was killed, and I covered the aftermath of that. And I remember talking to the police sergeant, and he said, we're looking for an 11-year-old. And I was like, oh my God. And then I was there a week later when I was down at that time, it's the Pullman area, police headquarters, and all of a sudden the call came in that a body had been found. Mm-hmm. And what happened was Yummy was killed by his by his gang members because they were afraid he was going to talk. Right. And so I was there when I saw his, you know, this is a very sad story, but I mean, you see this little 11-year-old body and it just sort of really affected me. It still does to this day. It's just sort of like, gosh, you know, it's just this world that we live in is really, it's, you know, really sad sometimes. I mean, that he found himself in that web where he ended up killing somebody and then he ends up being the victim too. It's just like,
and it's no way out of that.
And there's no way out, exactly.
It's just this horrible, endless cycle of violence.
So I don't want to bring it down, but
no
it's stories, you asked for
no it,
that,
it truly
you
know, is yeah. It's stories that affect you and affect you
right
the
exactly.
E and the A so I remember that story. How about you, Courtney?
You know what, I have covered so many stories, and here lately because I'm on the morning show I do a lot of crime, but I really have to say honestly when I sat down and thought about this, like, I could not stop thinking about Laquan McDonald. Like, I cannot, and I know this is like so recent, but honestly never has a story impacted a major city like the story of Laquan McDonald and what happened to him. And I think for us in TV news, when we heard about his shooting, we thought it was another police-involved shooting, meaning we didn't know the implications of this and what was going on behind the scenes and the alleged intimidation and the videos that were trying to be kept from, you know, seeing the light of day and the politicians that were involved and all of that. And to see how a couple of journalists, a journalist and an advocate, basically shook up City Hall by releasing
and county government
as well, City Hall, everything.
It
was just amazing. And when you think about the life of Laquan McDonald, he had this troubled life. He lived in the system.
He was in the system,
and he didn't have a lot of people in his corner. And so it's so unfortunate, the way in which he lived and the way in which he died, you know, at just such a young age. And I'll never forget when the video was released and all these news conferences, and Anita Alvarez had her news conference. I was working at CLTV. Well, you know, it's all one and the same, but I was anchoring for CLTV at the time, and it was nonstop live coverage as we were trying to piecemeal through that video of Laquan McDonald getting shot 16 times, mostly in the back, and we were trying to figure out what we could air very quickly and get it on. And I just remember the decisions that were being made and the short turnaround time and the emotion that came with it. I remember the day after wearing black to work, because that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. It was just so somber for me to see that this child, who really didn't have a chance in the world, how he was shot 16 times by a Chicago police officer. So, and my father is a retired Chicago police officer, so that struck a chord with me too.
Mm-hmm.
So it just... It's one of those stories that is going to live with you forever, and it's going to change things. And now William Calloway, who is instrumental in helping to get that video to see the light of day, he's running for office.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so we may see him as an alderman soon. He's getting ready to have a debate, I believe, here pretty soon. But it's just been amazing to see the couple of years that have gone by and the things that have changed and things that haven't changed. We're still seeing some elements of corruption within the Chicago Police Department, and that came out with another shooting that we've been covering. So
you bring up change in social media, and I want to ask you both this too. Mm-hmm. Do you think social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we were all Instagramming, you know, that you're on the show tonight when we were in the break.
Right.
Do you think social media has changed journalism? And if you do you think it changed it for the better or for the worse or both? I know it's kind of an open-ended question, but
it's absolutely changed journalism.
Yeah.
I mean, from the days when, you know, I would be thinking about, okay, what's, you know, I have a couple hours to really write this story I got 15 minutes to write this, you know, and I got 1 minute to write this tweet, you know.
Exactly.
And so it's changed it all. And it's changed it both on the distribution side, but also on the sourcing side and the communication side with your readers or your, you know, your audience. It's constant. And so And the question, the second part of your question, better or worse?
Yeah,
I mean, there's
probably both.
It's both. It is. I think it's absolutely both. I mean, there are real positives to that. I feel much more connected. Sometimes I wish I wasn't with the audience because they don't really like what we're writing.
Right.
You know, you hear back from your audience a lot
very
more
quickly.
These days. Right. Exactly.
Quickly. Yeah.
It is way it more is. Than I used to. I used to get like you know. Literally snail mail letters. That was my reaction from the readers. Then it turned into email. Mm-hmm. Now it's a tweet. And that's good and bad, really, honestly. It's really, sometimes it's like, oh, that made me think of something I hadn't thought of. And then other times it's, you know, it's people trolling. So, which is a real problem. Yeah.
It is.
So that's
yeah.
the downside to it. And, you know, and the constant feeding, I don't know if that's really healthy for us as a humanity. Like the
what is it, FOMO, the fear of missing out?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's just the constant barrage. Sometimes I get a little worried.
You
that,
have
that
to learn when to shut it down. Yeah. That's what I've learned. Like sometimes yeah. when I'm on vacation and if I'm off, I walk away
oh,
from
yeah.
social media because yeah. it's impossible not to see the news. It's mm-hmm. it's going to be there.
Right.
And I agree with you, John. It definitely puts you closer in connection with your viewers. I'm on Facebook Live right now, mm-hmm. you know, with my fans, and so they're giving me feedback and instantaneously I'm looking at that
right
but also
and good and bad
yeah right,
yeah.
right.
I'm sure it's all good.
Sometimes you hear the comments you don't want to but you know I think it's great you get news tips that way but it's a lot of pressure because you're looking at the competition throwing their tweets out and it may not be accurate or it may be mm-hmm. you may need some verification or something
yes.
like that
yes.
you know
yep.
and so you're wondering oh my gosh should I put it out there I heard the same thing but it hasn't been verified yet
right
so you know you run into that issue. And so what I always try and do is err on the side of caution because I never want my stuff to be screenshotted.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like, oh, yep. this reporter said
oh,
this
sure.
and it's not correct.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's good and bad to that. It's definitely a way to get your message out much quicker and get the info out much quicker.
Yeah.
So, but it's a lot of pressure because people expect that. You know, they're like, they're looking at your page like, I heard R. Kelly got arrested
right,
again.
Right,
why
exactly.
is this on your
right.
page?
And you covered it yesterday, right. so you should be on it this morning.
Right, right. But I try to do that. I really do try to do that with my fans and my viewers and stuff like that. But I do also try to make sure that I know what I'm talking about before I just run out and
yeah. I think you hit. Yeah,
you always got to be sure. right. It's better always be right than first.
Here. We're talking to Courtney Guzman and John Chase on Andrea and the Reporters tonight. Next, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to ask them the story that they're still pursuing or chasing. Next.
Back to Andrea Darlish and the Reporters on WGN Radio.
Courtney Guzman and John Chase on the panel tonight. John's the director of investigations at the BGA, spent 18 years as a general assignment reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Courtney Guzman, an Emmy-nominated journalist who has been... You're Emmy-winning, aren't you?
Not yet.
Come
girl.
On.
Don't jinx me. Let's not talk about wins.
Emmy-nominated. You've been nominated. Yeah. You will not be the Susan Lucci. You're so young. You have plenty of time. You've won a zillion awards. You've
and
been
Susan
in Channel
Lucci
2.
Susan Lucci won, too, right? Eventually.
I think so, she did.
Right?
I
yeah.
think.
You have plenty of time. You're excellent. So, formerly of Channel 2, now with Channel 9, WGN-TV, our family. So, I wanted to ask you guys, what story each is still, whether it's another book, a mm-hmm. story that you're chasing or covering, just something that is still out there for you that you really want to dip your toes into? It could be a documentary or a film or a book you want to write or a story that you're covering. What would that be?
For me, it's crime. Crime in Chicago. We have such a problem with crime in Chicago. It's going down now, and the city is doing some things to make sure that, you know, they've dramatically increased the CPD force and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I would really like to see the crime go down on the south side and on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not happened. So there's so many implications to that. When I talk about, you talk about jobs, you talk about education,
yeah.
you talk about lack of access. There's so many things that play into that. And so I really would like to see crime go down in African-American communities on the south and west side. And I'm hoping that I can actually see that
see it happen.
To come to pass, yeah,
yeah,
in the city. And I think when we get some new leadership in here, I think that's going to be a priority mm-hmm. for them as well.
Right. So Lori Lightfoot said if she wins, she said last week, if she wins the day after the election, she's going to meet with Eddie Johnson and they're going to have a conversation. you know, and because I asked her right out, I said, are you going to, is there going to be new leadership at the CPD? Mm-hmm. And she said, hold on, we're going to wait to win, and then we're going to have a discussion about it. So I think, you know, and Preckwinkle has said reform is on her platform
right.
as well. So either way, I think
she's
you're going to see some change.
She's already said she would get rid of Eddie Johnson.
Yeah, so. You're going to see something with that. I'd like to see you do, you know, a series during sweeps, Courtney, on that. You know, just how bad it was, how it's so much better now, and getting better. And, that would be the goal anyway.
And we're seeing a lot of African Americans leaving the city because of the crime. They're just trying to be someplace safe. You know, African Americans, we want the American dream too. We want to live in a safe place and go to work and mm-hmm. our kids go to school and be able to play outside in the front, in the backyards. But, you know, in certain parts of the city, you can't do that safely.
Right.
And so I would love to see that happen. And I would love for us to get to the bottom of it. It's not one answer. You know, I've sat here and racked my brain. It's
sure.
not one answer that could, one thing that can resolve this. It's a number of things.
It is.
And, I would love to address that and see it actually change.
I'd love to see that too. Yeah, John, how about you? What's next for you?
Yeah. So for me, it's, you know, I don't have like one story that like, oh, if I just had enough time, I would do this one story. I, you know, what I try to do with every story is really try to tell what I feel like still missing is a little bit of like what's happening out in the neighborhoods. What's, you know, we are constantly focused on what happens downtown.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. That's where a lot of people's, you know, attention is paid. But I feel like sometimes the stories that really interest me are the things that are happening in the 14th Ward with Ed Burke, or in the 41st Ward where I grew up, or mm-hmm. in the 19th Ward. And I feel like those don't get covered as much. And so every story that I go after, I always try to, I always think of things like in that, like, okay, is there a story that we're missing? Because those are the stories that most of Chicagoans are living day in and day out.
Right.
But they maybe don't see reflected in what I write or what's on TV or what's on the radio. And so, I mean, you know, so I think, you know, that's one of the things that sort of keeps driving me into when I look at stories, like trying to find those stories that aren't, you know, just there always, you know, for us. And that to Courtney's point, I mean, a lot of that's happening on the south side.
Yeah.
On the west side, these are areas that don't, you know, that don't get the coverage. So, I mean, that I would love to see. And it's just, it's always so frustrating to me because I feel like those, you know, that's part of, you know, when you hear the criticism of the media, like, I think that it's because part of that coverage doesn't get like it used to.
Yeah.
And so it's, I don't know, it's, I don't have like a one big story. I think of things like, you know, TV shows like The Wire or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Right. You know, it's like really told those stories from a neighborhood perspective, but then really showed that is the whole city.
I'm seeing another book.
Yeah.
I'm seeing another book
so
in your future.
Maybe
another, a sweeps piece and a book. You know, you both, when you speak and when you write and when you tell your stories, you're both very passionate about what you do, which I revere. I find that just so wonderful. So I want to know, who inspires you? What is your inspiration, or it, whether personally, professionally, who inspires you, John?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And I mean, professionally, the books that I read are like Robert Caro, who spent a long time. He did these series of books on LBJ, and he just dug in. He's the only guy. He's like written. He still isn't done. He started 35 years ago trying to write this guy's life story. So professionally, like, and those are just amazing books when you actually pick them up and read them. So, and his process, when I was writing the book on Blagojevich, I looked at sort of how he processed things, and he literally goes down to the LBJ library and opens up these boxes that have not been opened up
wow.
for 40 years to find new interesting ways to tell that story. So and then, you know, personally, my father was a big inspiration for me. He's passed away now, but mm-hmm. But just his ability to he owned a shop on the northwest side on Milwaukee Avenue back in the day, sold Citizen Band radios,
uh-huh.
if you
oh,
remember
cool.
those, yeah, right, and fixed them. But he evolved, and so his evolution, and he kept that business and allowed me to go to college to pay for it. That was always my inspiration.
Courtney, who inspires you?
I would have to say my mother and my grandmother, both rest in peace. They really set some great examples for me. And as I mentioned, my grandmother put me through college on a fixed income. My mother, I watched her earn a master's degree, raising two children inside of a marriage and being a manager, you know, at a local ER as a nurse. So I just watched these women do amazing things and break these boundaries. And they taught me these wonderful lessons. And then also I look at historic figures like Ida B. Wells. She was a journalist and, you know, she championed, you know, her fight and got her story out there. She told her story about lynching and how wrong it was in the South. And so I just, I look at women, strong and powerful women like that, and I do get inspired, and it encourages me to press on and keep going.
Thank you both for being here. Sure, you're both very inspirational. Keep writing. Where can people find both of you? Social media as well?
I'm on Twitter most of the time at Chase John, so reverse my name, because somebody took John Chase before I
did. Chase John, yeah.
I know, yeah. So that's the best place to find me, or at the Better Government Association, which is bettergov.org.
Very good, Courtney.
I'm everywhere. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can just look me up at Courtney Guzman, G-O-U-S-M-A-N. Or, you know, of course, I'm on WGN Morning News, starting
WGN
at 4
TV, 9 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Are those your days?
Actually, I work Saturday through Wednesday. Okay. So I'll be on in the morning at 4.
It doesn't seem like you ever get a day off. Thank you for doing this. I know this is late. And congratulations. I know you were just on Dancing with the Chicago Celebrities.
Yay!
You had my vote. You did
so
great.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I didn't win, but I had a great time. I raised over $9,000 for breast cancer research and mammograms. So
excellent.
I was really, really excited about that. So thanks to everyone that helped me do that and supported me and championed me. Thanks to my dance partner, Drew. He was great. I missed my dance lessons. I lost 10 pounds. You know, that was wonderful.
You look great.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much. It's Courtney Guzman and John Chase, and we'll be back after this on 720 WGN.